Welcome, guys and gals, to this super-duper episode of Nerd Management, where we give the Kirby Crackle a new meaning. with me, as always, is my dashing, daring, courageous, and caring co-host.
My name is Warner Swopes, and we've got several guests with us.
Yeah, we've got a full house today.
The studio is busting at the seams. We have my lovely wife, Tiffany Swopes, with us again.
Hello.
To add some more insight, like the wonderful Walmart nerds, which is our new favorite thing.
That's right.
Because you need more estrogen.
Yeah. That's right. There does need to be more.
I don't have enough to support everything.
Alec has been our only source of estrogen for weeks, and this is not really...
He's not delivering. I can't hold the mantle that long.
It's all right. I ain't got enough to share.
We got with us Justin Smith from a few weeks ago. He was in here talking about things and getting involved. So we've got him here with us. And we've got the talented Chris Banta here on the soundboard.
Hello.
All right.
I think every time that he's in, we should play like the Bulls, like the theme song whenever like Michael Jordan would come out and just like standing 6'2".
Wait, is this some kind of sports thing? I don't get it. I don't know nothing about sports.
Yeah, it is. It's okay.
Or like the Monstars in Space Jam when the Monstars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Totally, yeah.
Hey, by the way.
Yeah.
Wait, no, that's Sean Bradley, not Aaron Wachtos. Never mind. It doesn't apply. You wouldn't understand.
If it's not one of the Monstars, then I don't really know.
Which one was your favorite?
The Big Blue.
Big Blue was my favorite, yeah.
That guy's my favorite. Went to school, the guy looked like that. Anyway. Let's move on to our weekly comics.
Yeah.
Alec, what was your favorite comic this week?
My favorite comic book this week was Daredevil, number 30.
Good issue.
Yeah. It was so perfect because it was just, like we were saying, it's a one-issue story arc. It has to do with Silver Surfer, which is awesome, and I know very little about Silver Surfer, so...
But great thing to talk about since it is Kirby Month.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
Jeff Kirby created the Silver
Surfer. I didn't do that because it was Kirby Month, right. just so you know. But, no, it was such a perfect little just story. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic, so... What about you?
I will say that was one of my favorite issues this week.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about, like, the shorter story arcs, and that was kind of like a one-and-done story, but totally... I feel like I got everything out of that story that you would need from a story.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the rest of what's going on, but it was just such a cool little
Mark Waid did a lot of awesome things this week because we also had his Indestructible Hulk with the time travel where he's fighting dinosaurs and cowboys, and that was pretty rad.
How was that?
It was awesome. It was everything I would hope from the Hulk versus dinosaurs and cowboys. So that was great. But I think I really think my favorite my book of the week, it's tough. I think it's probably Batman and Robin, which right now is titled for this week was titled Batman and Nightwing,
right?
Because right now Pete Tomasi is writing Batman and Robin since Damian Wayne is dead. He's kind of just Batman's going through all the stages of grieving, you know, anger, denial. Acceptance.
How do you know Batman's actually going through those first three stages?
Well, all of the stages are like the title of each issue is the stages in order.
Oh, okay.
And
so
right now,
unless they spelled it out, you probably wouldn't know because that's kind of like Batman always in that state of mind.
This one was.
It's always hinted at.
This one was the acceptance stage, and who better to team up with for him than his first Robin, Dick Grayson.
And I kind of thumbed through it. I didn't read that. I don't have that picked up, which I probably should. But
you should. It's a really good book.
That looked like it takes place in between the Batman Incorporated, like, because he's fighting Leviathan, obviously.
Well,
like,
he's running this simulated program where he's like seeing if there was a way he could have saved Damian.
Okay.
And what makes it my favorite
it's very
book,
tricky.
What makes it my favorite book of the week is, you know, he's been brooding about this for months and.
Batman brooding, really?
I think this is probably, I didn't think about this before, but this is probably why. Zero Year is taking place now is I don't think Scott Snyder wanted to tackle the aftermath of Damian stuff so much.
Yeah.
He did that one issue right before Zero Year.
Which was great. It was really
but
good.
I don't think he wanted to drag it out as long as he needed to, so he kind of took it to a different time.
Sure.
He actually mentioned that
there other people killed enough Robins that he doesn't want to mess with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but anyway, he's going through this grieving process and he's trying to figure out if there's something he could have done differently.
Sure.
And what the point of acceptance comes when, you know, this whole time Alfred's been trying to bring different people in to, like, help soothe him, people from his life over the whole course of the time. And this time he's like, if nobody else can, Dick Grayson's going to be able to.
Sure.
And he's Dick Grayson comes in and he's like, talk sense into him. He's like, talk sense into him, Master Richard, and make him stop saying, make him stop going through this scenario in his head and seeing if there's anything you can do differently. And he's like, okay, well, let me run the scenario with you. Yeah. And Alfred's like, what? That's not what I asked you to do. I asked you to come stop this nonsense. But, so they go together, and then they realize that, you know, there's not really much he could have done. And then they have this heartfelt talk that Nightwing's just the best at. He's just, yeah. That's why he's one of my favorite characters, because he has this really...
He's really good at just getting sentimental,
just
breaking down.
Listen, bro.
Guys.
He's a real sensitive character, so it works really well.
Does that appeal to you?
He's essentially Bruce Wayne's first son.
Sure.
We all are.
And I believe this for a long time. I think Dick Grayson was always a part of Bruce Wayne that he never got to be because he had to grow up so quick as a child.
Absolutely. Right.
And then he meets this kid who's, you know, this fun-loving acrobat but happens to also have tragedy in his life but still somehow found some joy in life.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, Morrison's Batman dealt a lot with that when Bruce was stuck in time and Dick Grayson became Batman.
Right.
Which, by the way, Dick Grayson Batman
was one of my favorite moments.
So good.
Favorite part ever is when Commissioner Gordon turns around and he's still standing there.
I was going to mention that. Yeah. that was what was so obvious. He didn't just leave. He was also the Batman who smiled. Like, they mentioned that a lot.
Yeah.
That he, you know, and like, Batman doesn't smile, and he was like, I know that you're not the normal Batman because you're always smiling and having a good time. And that's kind of just what I think of when I think of Dick Grayson.
Yeah.
True. Very true.
He's great.
Do you think... I've never read this comic, but do you think Batman feels a little bad because he's more obsessed with Damian's death than he was Jason Todd's?
Oh yeah, there was actually the anger issue of the grieving story arc was Jason
Red
Todd,
Hill, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Jason was basically like, "You're being a jerk, Batman, because you didn't really react this way with me."
Yeah.
And
there were different
circumstances. But basically
definitely
what it comes down to is the end of it is Alfred runs the simulation for himself, where Alfred was basically, if you remember, Damian was like,
right, he,
I'm going to go help my dad.
Yeah.
And Alfred's like, here's your costume.
Yeah.
And so Alfred runs that simulation, and then Bruce sees it, and they have this really like heartfelt moment where Bruce is basically like, I didn't really realize, but you also lost a son. And like, this is like, he was just as much part of your family as he was mine.
And by the way, it was your fault.
Thanks for doing that.
And
not
so that,
stopping
I
it.
Think,
that's great.
I think that kind of, I think that was kind of what made it the book of the week for me. Is like, I love heartfelt comics when it's done in a way that, like, it still had a lot of action in it with the simulations and stuff, and it had a lot of character and a lot of heart, and I really just like
that's why I like Hawkeye so much, and it didn't come out this week, but it has these like just really heartfelt moments just surrounded by this such humor, and I love that.
I think it is worth mentioning, though, the one thing that I really liked, this wasn't my book of the week, but it was definitely up there. There were a lot of great books this week.
Yeah,
but Superior Spider-Man
is really good.
Last month we had the whole thing with Phil Urich being outed as the Hobgoblin. We're like, where is this going to go?
Yeah.
Well, he kind of embraces being outed and attacks.
It's just his nephew, by the way. I think in the last one I said it was his son, and I was wrong.
So he kind of attacks, and his girlfriend is this blonde girl that works at the Bugle who's been kind of like helping him get footage of the Hobgoblin, but she didn't realize he was.
Yeah.
And basically, Spider-Man swings in, and he's like, we're going to deal with this right here at the Bugle. And Urich's like, you want proof that I'm the Goblin? You want everybody to see that I'm the Goblin? What says Goblin more than a dead blonde? And I thought that was like, what a stingy line.
Yeah.
For Dan Slott, who doesn't normally have those kind of like...
He's very like, I don't... I love Dan Slott's writing. I really do. But he's very like kind of... glossed over, like he doesn't really do anything too edgy or anything
that's the first,
I think that's
like
why
I said,
it stands out
so
much.
That's the first Gwen Stacy
reference
that I've read in his stuff in a while, and
yeah,
it was a real dig, and I liked it a lot. I thought I thought it really, like,
it was a knife turner, like, not just stab.
Yeah. And so I really liked that. So that was a contender for sure for Book of the Week for me. Yeah. But just that Alfred and Bruce moment really
also
won me over for Batman and Robin.
You were talking about how she, like, was next to him the entire time, but didn't. How do you fly that close to the sun and not realize, like, how?
That sounds like an awesome, like, rock star, like, who was just like, oh man, just live his life, blue blues to the sun and burn down.
That's Bret Michaels' like new album.
Too close to the sun.
Too close to the sun.
Rock my RV.
Rock. Yeah, that's.
So what's HGTV. Your... Yeah, I just realized the double entendre of that title of that show. Just now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that see, was... the second I saw Bret Michaels, like, doing that show, I was like, wow, wait. What? No, I get
it. Yeah, that makes sense. Exactly. So, what was your least favorite book of the week?
My least favorite book of the week was Superman Unchained, and...
I didn't hate it, but it just doesn't stand out.
It wasn't great. Yeah, it was kind of boring. I don't really like the way that he's handling Wraith's storyline. I would rather him just be straight up villain. Like, well, basically, you know, Superman's match, just completely the opposite.
Well, like I've said numerous times, I hate when the writers decide that for their first story arc, they're going to go big and create this new villain. And Scott Snyder always does that, but he does a great job with it. The Court of Owls stuff was awesome.
It was fantastic.
Good stuff.
So good. It's so good.
I think I wanted Wraith maybe to be that. I was like, okay, well, if he's going to create this new character, he needs to be huge.
Right.
And he just kind of isn't. But there's going to be something, I'm sure. It's just going to take a while to build. And right now, issue by issue, I'm not super
And impressed. I mean, it is only the third issue.
When the story arc's done and I read the whole thing, I'm probably going to be like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah.
But it's just taking a while to... Well,
and I hated Lois Lane's father. I can't remember what his name is. I hated him.
Douchey Lane.
Yeah, Douchey Lane. Super douchey.
He's one of my least favorite Superman characters.
He's just annoying. It's General Ross, but
but in Superman,
it's so irritating.
He doesn't lose his mustache to becoming a Red Hulk.
Right.
They try to make you feel like compassionate or feel bad for the villain in that book.
No, not really. He kind of so the
it's
whole,
sort of not a villain.
Yeah,
it's
he's kind
of
just
political take.
Yeah, exactly. It really is. It's
basically
very, like,
they should just swap out and put Lex Luthor in there. Like, that's what we're waiting for.
Well, Lex Luthor is a big part of the story,
but it should
it's
just
like
be
a side
him.
Story,
yeah.
And we're not really sure what's happening. Like, you just kidnapped Jimmy Olsen.
Like,
that was cool.
Yeah, I did like Jimmy Olsen's little side story. So basically, what it is
the governor in True Blood.
Suck it.
So basically, like, the whole story of it is that instead of us dropping the bomb, and I think it's Hiroshima, or is it Okinawa? I can't remember which one.
Nagasaki is the one. They say Hiroshima was our only bomb we had.
That's right.
Nagasaki, we dropped this other Superman guy named Wraith.
He tore it up, basically. And he's been kind of behind all of these, you know, secret op things, that, you know, all over time. And just... He's not a bad guy, but he's not really good either. He kind of just does whatever he wants to do. But
he's a really boring villain.
He's a
not
really a villain.
I
still don't think they're ever going to be able to make a villain like the Joker ever again. And that's what
they want. It's going
to
be impossible. You can't. But I mean, that was my least favorite book of the week. I mean,
that's fair.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's not anything really bad. Just stuff that wasn't like.
Yeah. And I kind of felt the same about the Avengers, the Infinity tie-in. It wasn't bad, it was just, it's alright, I guess.
So I guess now is time for the moment of glory.
That's right.
My moment of glory!
That makes me laugh every time.
Thank you, Randy Savage, for that wonderful speech.
Slap to a sledge.
Moment of glory this week comes out of Justice League Dark with the Trinity War, penultimate issue. Where we,
that means
number 5 out of 6 for all of you that don't know.
Yeah, I learned that in college.
Penultimate,
how sad is that?
Means that it's before the ultimate issue,
right.
Which ultimate means the end, and that's why we get the word ultimately.
So they have an ultimate version of Fantastic Four.
That's
fun. So the big moment here is Shazam gets a hold of the Pandora's box.
Yeah.
And when he does, all of the DC multiverse, mostly the magical
characters. Yeah, I point out, it's mostly the magical people.
The magical characters get drawn in. And we get a one-panel Swamp Thing getting all tingly from it. And,
all swampy.
I was like, yeah! And then,
any chance you get.
Did he use some fruit?
No, he got electrocuted by magical Pandora business.
But he is just like in the, he's in like the top corner, just like, I'm all withery.
But all the magic characters are affected by this, and one is Dr. Fate from Earth 2, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
So now the multiverse is coming together for the first time in the New 52, and that's exciting to me.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Have they addressed us since the crisis?
No.
No.
Not since, once they relaunched everything, they kind of didn't address, Earth 2 is a different book, like it takes place in a different reality, and
which is really good.
But they haven't really connected yet. There was a little bit with Batman and Superman where they went into Earth 2 somehow, we're not really sure how that's happened yet.
Oh, yeah, and that's in Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're not sure what's going on. But clearly there's going to be a connection, and my speculation, and this is only spoilers if I'm right.
Right.
But my speculation today, we talked about this a little bit before when we were hanging out. I think that Pandora's Box is the doorway to the multiverse.
Sure.
And
that'd
so
be
then,
a good way to explain it.
I mean, well, the next big story coming up, summer event, is Forever Evil. That's DC's big event.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been announced that the crime syndicate of Earth 3 are the main villains of that.
Yeah.
So the way they're gonna have to come into this somehow, and I think it's that
Batman. Our Batman better stock up on blue kryptonite.
Yeah,
that's right.
Blue kryptonite.
Yeah.
Which I noticed that in Superman Unchained. One moment I did like is there was this moment where Lex Luthor was holding blue kryptonite, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Blue. And that's obviously going to lead into Forever Evil and fighting the syndicate and stuff. I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what if Lex Luthor actually teams up with the crime syndicate?
Forever Evil is actually a group of villains plus Batman, I guess?
Well, yeah, because he's the only hero that's in, like, when you see the Forever Evil splash page, he's like...
But it's basically all these villains team up to fight the syndicate because they're like... Because the syndicate comes in and wants to take over the whole world. And the villains are like, we like our world, we just like being crummy to it.
Right.
And
so kind of like, I can pick on my little brother, but
nobody else can.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
When I think like the whole basis is like the villains of of Earth 1, I suppose, actually end up fighting the crime syndicate, and like that's how it. I mean, that's only spoilers if it actually happens.
Yeah.
But you know, but I think that was our moment of glory. So
yeah, definitely.
It was really cool. I don't know.
So, today when we talk about our Getting to Know You feature.
Getting to know you. Getting to know
since it is Kirby month, you know, we figured we'd stick, obviously we're going to stick with the Kirby theme. So, what are we going to talk about today, Mr. Swoops?
Today I'm going to educate you all on the Jack Kirby's New Gods. But there's a lot of story here, because mostly what I want to talk about is that Jack Kirby kind of got crapped on toward the end of his career, in that people just kept shuffling him around for a long time. I think it was the late 60s. He was doing some stuff on Thor, with I believe Walt Simonson probably was writing it at the time, and I could be wrong. And some people are going, man, nerd on us all over the place. But that would mean they'd have to listen to the podcast.
That was a really good question.
And they'd have to get on our Twitter, which would be great. I'd actually welcome the traffic.
Yeah, anybody.
You welcome trolling now.
Yeah, I would welcome trolling at this
point. Please don't troll me. I hate it when you do that.
But anyway.
I'm going to send you unwarranted solicited.
I'm going to set up 15 accounts
on my body.
All buttheads.
I'm not going to say which part.
But that's awesome. That trolling would be great right now. But anyway.
Hashtag troll.
I think it was Walt Simonson.
Text T-Bone Steak for...
T-Bone Steak!
Oh, Jay!
I think that it was Walt Simonson and Jack Kirby were working on Thor at the time.
Okay.
And Jack Kirby was a big-time, like, planner. Like, he liked to be ahead of the game.
Yeah.
So he had all these huge stories planned for, you know, this is what happens in Thor, and this is what, you know, Ragnarok's going to happen, then I want to tell this future
Ragnarok
story. The Norse gods were the old gods. I want to tell this story about the new gods. Well, he got fired before it happened. Marvel just cut him off. Yeah. So, but then DC was like, oh, whoa, we can pick up Jack Kirby right now?
Right.
That's huge. The creator of Fantastic Four. And, I think he created the X-Men with Stan Lee. He also created
Like we were saying, Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer, yeah. But
just, the Celestials.
He worked with Stan Lee a lot, but let's face it, Jack Kirby really created a lot of those characters, and Stan Lee put words to them.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to. But anyway, he was like, this is my other story. Well, then DC snatched him up, and they were like, you can write Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen. And he's like, oh, well, that kind of sucks. But he made the best of it and created these characters called the New Gods in the DC universe. And that's where we get Darkseid and Orion and, help me out here, Kalibak, Mr. Miracle, Big Barda. A lot of really great DC characters.
Sounds like a cross-dresser or something. Big Barda.
She's actually just like this, like, 6'7", just big old woman.
She sounds
nothing
like...
but...
Yeah. I guess that's why she's Big Barda.
Yeah. But,
have you seen Cloud Atlas?
Yes.
She's a lot like the nursery home lady.
That's hot.
Anyway, her husband is Mr. Miracle, and he's like this magical escape artist, and his name is Scott Free.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Real cheesy, but that's what I love about Jack Kirby. His stuff is so over-the-top cheesy.
Sometimes it's right on the nose.
But there's nothing, like, they don't mess around.
Yeah.
But basically, his whole story is this one planet was unified, and then Ragnarok happened, and then it blew up. So they're not really gods, because Jack Kirby's whole thing... Jack Kirby was Jewish, and fun little story.
Life
some Nazis in New York, some neo-Nazis came into the New York DC office at one point. There were a lot of Jewish writers at the time.
Nazis.
And Jack Kirby is known for just like being like a scrapper, you know? And there's this really great story.
I just really like how you said scrapper.
Yeah, well, because that's what he would have said. He also created the Newsboy Legion, who was like, just these rough and tumble newsboys.
We need a video podcast. You know, there's a choreography here.
Because I'm doing the whole nose rub with my thumbs.
Meh, see? Extra. So get your fist here.
Yeah, so Jack Kirby, basically these neo-Nazis come in and like start throwing papers around, and like, this happened on two occasions. I've heard two different stories. Maybe they're the same story, just different people had different accounts of it. But one story is these neo-Nazis come in and they're just like trashing the DC offices. And Jack Kirby just beats the crap out of him. Takes him out. Like, two...
Well, you
like,
could say scrap the crap out of him.
Oh. And he kicks him out of the office.
When he kicked him out, he's like, you guys are scraps.
But then later there's another story. And I can't for the life of me remember who the artists or writers were that have told these stories in numerous interviews. But
sure.
There's one story where... I guess there was like this towel cleaning service... where instead of paper towels, they reused towels, and then they'd take them out and get them clean and then bring them back.
Mm.
Well, DC had stopped using this one company that was clearly run by mobsters to, like, launder their money. So they sent these...
Literally.
So they sent these guys...
Oh! Like, launder their money.
They sent these guys like, hey, you guys is going to get your towels cleaned by us or no one else, see? And then Jack Kirby's like, oh, really?
Here.
And then he just totally Kirby crackle him right.
Kirby crackle.
Gets it out of there. Yeah. So Jack Kirby's this super awesome, like, from what I understand, devout Jewish man.
Right.
But he knows how to tumble if he has to. So,
well, I mean, his God is the Old Testament God.
Yeah, right, exactly.
He's full of piss and vinegar.
So he totally understands, like, the rough and tumble thing. So anyway, Jack Kirby creates the New Gods. But what I love about Jack Kirby's stuff...
Since this is like 1940, just continue.
And so in Thor, the movie, you know, Thor says, some people call it magic, some people call it science. But on my world, it's the same thing.
Right.
That is Jack Kirby's complete philosophy on like all of his New God stuff is they're only gods because people don't understand the magic science they're using.
Yeah.
And so that was a long story to get here. But Mr. Miracle, for example, his power is that he's good at getting out of stuff. He's like a Houdini.
Exactly.
And his name is Scott Free.
His name is Mr. Miracle.
Yeah.
It's just... Let's think about
so he's like this
unless
awesome
you're talking
skater.
About the USA hockey team.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's a great slapshot you got this. So that's the New Gods. Well, then...
Then the Nazis came
in. Eventually, yeah. Eventually, DC...
I'm in New York trying to write comic books.
So eventually...
Writes this.
Eventually, DC got tired of him too and screwed him over, and DC fired him. Well, this is late. This is probably heading toward the probably late 70s, early 80s. And then Jack Kirby gets hired back by Marvel, and what does he do? He creates the Eternals, which are basically the New Gods of Marvel.
Right.
And
right.
So he had this epic story that he wanted to tell his whole life that was basically a Thor story that became the New Gods of the DC Universe, and then eventually the Eternals, which, if you haven't read the Eternals, it's great stuff. Like, the original Jack Kirby stuff, it's super crazy, and
yeah,
there's tons of Kirby crackle on every page.
Wasn't he, like, one of the first, like, big story arc guys that, like, yeah. thought...
Everything yeah. builds. If you read the... I have all the Kirby omnibus over there. If you read the first New Gods omnibus, Darkseid just shows up in a panel at one point. And you're just like, I don't know what that guy's all about. And then he becomes this huge villain toward the end of, like, volume 3 or 4. So it's like this... whole like, together thing.
The only reason he put that panel in there is like, see, I did think this through. It was a genius.
Yeah.
It was the bad wolf. So,
so Jack Kirby's yeah. clearly, obviously, one of my favorite, like, he's one of my favorite artists of all time.
Yeah. He's severely underrated, I think.
I'm really excited that I get to go to Cincinnati and meet Bernie Wrightson in the next couple of weeks, because my top three favorite artists of all time are Jack Kirby, Carmen Infantino, and Bernie Wrightson. And Jack Kirby and Carmen Infantino, I'll never get a chance to meet. Yeah. They're both gone. And maybe, Carmen Infantino, not that long ago, just was 6 months ago, maybe, at the most.
Yeah.
And so that's a bummer. He's the first person to draw Barry Allen.
Don't even tell me.
One of my absolute favorite people. But Bernie Wrightson is the creator, co-creator of Swamp Thing, and I'm super pumped to meet him.
We may actually get to do a little bit of kind of a...
I'm going to talk to him maybe about, like, plugging the podcast. Like,
that'd be awesome.
This is Bernie Wrightson, and you're listening to Nerd Management, or something like that.
Does he growl everything he says?
Yeah. I don't know. I would imagine so. I think it'd be really cool. Co-created Swamp Thing.
I think it'd be really cool if you got him to, like, say it, but he said it, like, completely wrong. Nerd manager is meant.
Like, he doesn't say like him. At all. And you're like, that's really him.
No, it is. Or, you know, if he doesn't, he doesn't make it up.
Yeah. No, we're just like, we'll keep it in.
He doesn't like the drink refill Chick-fil-A guy.
That's basically, that's kind of the basics of the routes. And if you want to know more about that, I mean, look him up on Wikipedia.
Are they still on your side?
You can even borrow my Jack Kirby omnibus if you're nice to him. On to our topic for tonight.
So, our as well as comic book nerds, we are movie buffs, and we're movie nerds. I think all of us are.
Yeah. Probably more movie than comic.
This is probably where people are going to more chime in other than just you and I.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. But, we kind of touched on it before, but we kind of want to talk about it more. It's amazing what is considered a quote-unquote financial flop nowadays for, you know, summer movies and, you know, even winter movies. And what brought it on was because Lucasfilm announced that...
Basically, Disney wants to just completely destroy the movie industry.
Right, pretty much.
Because right now, movies that are successful in the summer have to make a lot of money because they're competing against high-dollar movies like The Avengers and The Dark Knight Rises and things like that. But that's not so much the case, like, spring and winter.
Yeah.
But we already know that, I think next spring, the new Captain America comes out.
And that's in
March or April, and that's totally going to screw up the whole spring movie season.
Well, and I think that Disney / Marvel or / Lucasfilm, they've noticed that, and now they're shifting it to where...
Right. But what they're just going to have everything. Now everything has to compete with those movies.
Yeah.
Thor comes out in November.
Yeah.
And then they just announced, the big one that kind of brought this on, is they just announced that Star Wars is going to be in December of 2015.
Do you think they're just trying to prove a point saying that Disney's just awesome and it doesn't matter when they release it?
Pretty much.
Well, there for a while, Disney was hurting for money. So
Really, it doesn't matter when you release a Marvel film or a Star Wars film. I think
guess
they are.
I'm
going to
go see it.
They have enough of a following.
But, and I don't know, it's just... And the one thing that kind of deters me on the other side of it is the highest rated or the highest grossing movie of all time is Avatar at the moment, of course, which came out in December.
Yeah.
But I don't ever hear anybody saying like, "Oh well, we've got to make as much as Avatar. We've got to do it." It's from what I like. From what I notice, it's these movies like all the Marvel movies, all the DC movies, all of this, you know, now Star Wars. It's like, I don't know if they're trying to get, because, like I said, I don't hear them ever trying to compare to Avatar. It seems to be just Disney.
But
like,
now they want to take Disney. Those movies are taking over, and that's gonna. The example that we talked about a little bit earlier is Green Lantern made $65 million.
Yeah,
and was considered a flop.
Yeah,
same with the Wolverine, almost the exact same dollar amount, I think.
Yeah,
and it again was considered a flop because of the summer.
Yeah.
But if you released a movie in say like October or November and it made $65 million,
it would be
like, that's a great opening weekend for an October movie.
Right.
As long as it's not the week before The Hobbit 2.
Yeah.
Well, so it's kind of like what is the gauge here on
if
you look at like history, historically movies, like what they cost to make.
Waterworld is a great example.
Oh yeah, that movie was upside down.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and it's not a bad movie.
It actually Waterworld.
It's no Coneheads.
Waterworld was a bust because that movie cost so much money to make, and they actually didn't even make their money back on that. So that is what I would consider a flop.
Yeah,
if a movie is in the black, I feel like that's a successful movie. Just because it doesn't make, like, they're like, this movie could make $100,000 or $100 million in its opening weekend. Just because it doesn't do that doesn't mean it's a flop.
No.
I feel like if it's on Netflix within, like, 2 months of it being released, it should
be. That's a good gauge.
That's a good gauge.
Jafar goes to the eye doctor.
One or two.
A perfect example is Swamp Thing was meant to be this huge budget movie,
and we're back to
a big hit. Wes Craven at the time was a huge,
Huge name
in films.
Yeah,
and he wrote this, from what I understand, an amazing script. I never read the original script, and that's what made Adrienne Barbeau sign on. She's like, "This is the best script I've ever read, and it's for a Swamp Thing movie. That's crazy."
And I get to be naked like half the movie.
So. She signed on to do this movie, and I guess like the entire time they're filming, he's getting calls that his budget's getting cut, and so he had to like on the spot rewrite a lot of the film. And so she said in an interview that like she thought this movie was gonna suck. She's like, man, this movie's gonna just tank. Mm. But it was actually really successful when it opened. However, there is no record on the internet, even Box Office Mojo, IMDb.
Yeah, you done.
I did some serious research, and everything can tell you that it cost only three million to make that movie.
Right.
But nowhere can you find anything that says how much it made at all, let alone in its opening weekend. But it is considered a somewhat of a success, and now it's got a cult following that kind of has helped with DVD and Blu-ray sales and things like that. But
which really just consists of Warner and like two other people.
Right.
That's the current poll.
He buys copies for his friends. Like, you need this.
I don't think I do. No.
Thanks.
But anyway, the film was a success when it came out, and enough to get it to warrant a sequel, The Return of Swamp Thing, which
best of
that movie did not make any money.
The Return of Swamp.
But anyway, so what happened between 1982 when a movie cost $3 million for him to make this movie, and he was like, man, this is going to be a stinker because my budget got cut. And then it ends up making quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
And then, but who knows, the number is completely invisible to us, but it probably didn't make $65 million.
Right.
Well, and it came out in the summer, and it's considered a success in 82.
Yeah. Yeah.
Against, Tim Burton's Batman would have come out in 89. Mm-hmm. So the 80s, big movies, movies were making money by then.
Right.
So where did the cutoff happen that suddenly $65 million for an opening weekend is not a success?
Well, because I think it has to do with it being a comic book movie. Because now, like, all the movie companies see this pretty much this new audience that they can latch on to, because movies have been getting stale lately. A lot of remakes, a lot of seen that before. Mm. type of movies. So now you've got successful comic book movies out. And they're like, oh, well, then that means every comic book movie should be successful.
All the books.
Right.
And not just a comic book, but Marvel itself.
Yeah, Marvel obviously made this good movie.
And
so
they're obviously sinking a lot of money in these movies. I mean, look at the look at the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy. We're talking about... it's rumored that Latino Review let out yesterday, and they're normally spot on about everything, that that Bradley Cooper's been offered the voice role of Rocket Raccoon, which I think sucks. I really wanted
which
to be
is a
like
big
some,
thumbs down. From
yeah,
the
I wanted him
podcast.
To be like someone with like a gritty accent, you know, like a Jason Statham or you know like David Tennant, someone who has like a
David
really
Tennant
thick
would be a
accent.
Perfect.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Perfect. Real
also,
thick accent.
If they actually pay Vin Diesel to be Groot's voice to say three words the entire movie.
That's why they're blowing their budget is because all these people think, well, if you want my name on this superhero movie, then you need to
pay me. You say three words the entire time.
That's why Shark Tale didn't work. They're like, we can get some of that Finding Nemo money. Let's put Will Smith in there.
Right.
Well, that's
Shark Tale.
And that's where I think Warner Brothers is doing the right thing with doing these TV shows that tie into their movie universe.
Very smart.
Because TV actors are not going to cost you that much.
They just came from commercials.
Henry Cavill is not a huge name, so for Superman, they didn't get a big name, so they don't...
But they got a pretty name. Well,
So, I mean, they're drawing people in, saving some money. But I think what's causing this whole flop debacle is that movies are... The numbers don't really matter anymore.
Right.
Because they're putting in so much money, and it's ridiculous amounts of money. And then on top of that, ticket sales are... completely variable.
Yeah.
Because you can go see a regular 2D movie for in Indiana about $10.
Yeah.
We were in Chicago and we were gonna go see one and it was $16 for a 2D movie and that's ridiculous.
Yeah, around here we call it the $20 date night, so it's like
So it's $10 roughly to see a movie. Then if you go 3D then it's like $13. If you go 3D IMAX it's upwards of $20.
Which is worth it for a lot of reasons.
For some movies, But where does that fit into the budget? Like, how do you... You know, that's hard. Like, a movie doesn't get a 3D release or doesn't get an IMAX release, then that movie is naturally not going to make as much money
as those plastic glasses cannot cost that much.
No.
There's no way. No way.
Yeah. So,
but, I mean, let us know what you guys think. You know, tweet at Nerd Management. Tweet us at the podcast or tweet me. I'm at the Alec Ward.
I'm at Warner Swopes.
Justin, did you
say? I don't believe in the internet. I didn't even know it was real until today.
I'm at Queen Swopes and I never check it, but I might just for you guys.
I actually do have a Twitter, but I'm not active at all on it.
You can check our Twitter or we have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
But mainly go visit the Fanboy Factor. That's the website that hosts our podcast right now. Lots of great reviews by people like us. Sometimes actually us. I write some reviews and Alex
I write some reviews. Just avoid King Conan number one.
And if you like any of the comics that we talk about on here or you know want to learn a little bit more about the New Gods, you can always go to especially if you're in the Indianapolis area, you can go to Comic Book University, the best comic shop on the south side if not in the state of Indiana. And
I would agree.
It's literally the only one I go to.
Yeah, see.
If you don't live in Indiana, you can buy digital from him. Also, Rob will pretty much ship you anything.
Pretty much.
So, for example, you want to know more about the New Gods, you could, I'm sure he has the Jack Kirby Omnibus in store, he would ship.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
That would be the way to go. So, check out Fanboy Factor, check out Comic Book University, and come visit us on Twitter and Facebook at Nerd Management.
I'd love to hear from you.
And you can actually meet these goofballs in person.
Yay!
That's coming up soon.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Aware.
your show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can check out
the group.
I thought you meant me and Alec. No,
where
no.
am I?
Jeez.
Sorry, Mo.
Meat capper.
I had a tooth pulled today. I'm on some meds. I'm not really sure what's going on. Chris Banna and I are in a band called Brother O' Brother. You can check us out on Facebook also. We'll be playing in Fountain Square at the Hoosier Dome. On September 6th.
It's
check
death metal. Just
it'll be awesome when we play Diary of Planet.
Woo!
Awesome garage rock band out of Nashville. They're on Infinity Cat with Jeff the Brotherhood, Heavy Cream, all those people. They're worth your time.
Yeah.
Excrement Galaxy.
And we'll be like icing on the cake. Icing on the diarrhea planet.
I swear those are chocolates.
Chocolate.
Enjoy. Enjoy all of these wonderful things that we just offer to you on the internet. And also remember to check the completed auctions on eBay. Good night.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.